Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
B-Pod Studios.
This is...
That's so dumb!
Felger.
Oh, you idiot!
And Mass.
Holy crap!
Felger and Mass.
I hate that.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
What did you make of those comments from Kyrie?
The way I view the situation is, I think a lot of people, because of Kyrie's announcement at the beginning of the year, you know, thought that there was a marriage. I think that it's more like an engagement, and we're going to get married on July 1st. And that engagement is still on. As far as I know, in my individual conversations with Kyrie, we're still engaged, but we really can't, you know, make those vows, sign that contract until July 1st.
It's a beautiful time for a wedding.
Yeah. And so I just, you know, we do have to wait till July 1st to, you know, finish any deal.
All right, so I told you my take on this. Chris Gasper, join us now in our Town Fair Tire Studios. He's brought to you by MGH. Here is my take, Chris. They're still engaged. Good news, right? I said earlier, if you have to check in with your fiance if you're still good on the wedding, that's not a good sign. That is, even asking the question and doing the check-in, honey, are we still good? That tells you... Well, that's just not where you want to be. You never want to check back in if we're still good to go on the wedding. And so on the face of it, it seems like good news. But I'll tell you, just the fact that they talked or asked is a sign.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, I think you said earlier, or there was something on ESPN today about the Celtics believe they just have to do something in terms of solidifying Irving's confidence to re-sign. Do you have to solidify an engagement?
Exactly. Well, yeah, we're still on, but I need to see what happens between now and the wedding. Like, that's no answer. Yeah.
Scary, right?
And if you ask your fiance, we're still on, and she says yes, and you walk away saying that you need to solidify that, it's like...
At the very least, you know you're going to end up marrying a giant pain in the ass.
Oh, you got that's issues.
So something. If you ask her if it's okay and she says, yeah.
Exactly. Or check with me on the wedding day, which is pretty much what Kyrie said.
Exactly.
Like, check back with me on the wedding day, and I'll let you know going through with this thing. But, so, you know, keep buying the flowers and keep sending out the invitations. Just do all that stuff. But I'll let you know on the wedding day if we're actually going to do it.
Make sure it's refundable deposits, right, is what you would say on that wedding. But, Chris, you said last week on Friday at the Super Bowl that if you had to bet that the Celtics would not only not get Kyrie, they wouldn't get Davis, and if you had to bet... Their next year or whatever year you're talking about, they have no Kyrie and no Davis. Do you stand by that?
I said that there was a greater chance that the team you saw on Wednesday night against the Hornets, which was led by Tatum, Rozier, and Brown, there was a greater chance of that than you having both Davis and Kyrie Irving, and I still stand by that.
You still do. So nothing has transpired that would change your mind on that.
No, I mean, look, the one positive, I think, for the Celtics at the trade deadline was that Danny Ainge was able to convince Dell Demps not to deal him. He was able to do just enough dangling, I think, with Demps to say, hey, hold on, you know, this deal from the Lakers will still be there in June, and there'll be a better deal from us at the end of June, early July. And, you know, I'm telling you, I have to bring this up because Markelle Fultz got dealt yesterday, and what a heist by Danny Ainge. If I'm Dell Demps, I wouldn't throw Ainge as far as I could throw him. Trust him as far as I could throw him. I would look at it and say, okay, you know what he's doing here? He's dangling Tatum to me. So I don't trade the guy. And then we're going to have discussions in June and late July. And he's going to say, you know, I really don't want to include Tatum in this deal. You know, we have to find another way, Dell.
I said this all day yesterday.
I mean, so you dangle the guy that he really wants so he doesn't make any deal.
Exactly.
And then when it comes to time where the guy has to make a deal, the pressure flips now to Demps, to New Orleans. He has to unload this guy, has to make the deal, has to get it done. Danny knows that. He'll leverage that and be like, you know, Tatum's kind of tough. We're going to have to come up with another package.
Bait and switch. No question Danny's going to try and bend him over. No doubt about it.
Yeah, so again, though, and I understand it from that point of view. I still look at it from New Orleans' vantage point, though. the better thing for New Orleans to do is wait. I believe that. Like, you're not going to get as many people involved now as you will during the summer. Ripping apart a team for anybody is a lot easier during the offseason than in season.
No, it's still probably better to wait.
Yeah, so, now listen, I'm not...
I just wouldn't automatically assume that Danny's going to live up to his word and give you Tatum.
Oh, no, no. No, he shouldn't do that. I mean, if Demps does that, he's a fool.
Like, seriously.
I don't know, you know, but to me, the right thing for his franchise is to wait. Like, what do? You take the first thing that comes along and you move Anthony Davis at the deadline?
Well, I mean,
I think that's dumb.
Here's the question I would ask, though. I mean, you know, you had a highly motivated team in the Lakers that felt like there was a deadline there to get it done. And so how much better, if you're not getting Tatum, then how much better are the offers going to be? What are the other offers going to be in June?
Okay, but then how does it hurt you to wait?
Well, what if you don't get as good an offer from the Lakers?
You will.
You think you will?
Yeah, I do.
What if?
Well, you think the Lakers all of a sudden are going to back off?
What if Davis gets hurt?
Okay, so that's always a risk.
Well, not if he's on somebody else's team. Okay, and you've already gotten the assets for him. It's not. Well,
but that aside, when's the last time he played?
Well, they're saying he's going to play. I mean, they're saying he won't play back to backs, but he's going to play.
Okay, but there's always a risk of injury with anybody. Right.
Maz, the guy wasn't playing at all, and you could have dealt him. There was no injury. I mean, I guess he could have fallen down the stairs and torn his Achilles like John Wall. I guess that's a risk, but he wasn't playing in any games. They were sitting him out so they could shop him. Now he's going to play. He could potentially get hurt. I'm not saying they should have dealt him, but I just sort of feel like they didn't deal him because they feel like they can get Tatum in June or July, and I'm not sure they can.
Or they can get more somewhere else. How about Justin? See, that to me is what the more general story is that Demps thinks he can get more somewhere else. It might be Tatum. He might be banking on Tatum, sure. And he might be wrong to do that.
Well, yeah. Yes.
But I think he feels like he can get more somewhere else, and I think he's right not to take the first deal that falls in his lap.
The other big one is Williamson. You know, ping pong balls. Who gets the first overall pick?
Yep.
And now, if that team comes to you with the first overall pick, you can really sell it to your fan base. We're drafting the next Anthony Davis.
Absolutely.
But is that team going to trade Zion Williamson if Davis is saying, I don't want to sign here? There's only many teams on the list.
Exactly right.
That's what I'm saying. So the market, there's only many teams on the list. And how many of those teams even have a shot at Zion Williamson?
Okay, but again, just play it out. What if the Lakers miss the playoffs?
Yeah.
Because right now, what if they end up winning the lottery?
Okay, well, that's like a 3% chance.
Okay, it happened with the Cavaliers.
So they're right to wait. Exactly.
I just think with that kind of asset, you're just going to give them to the first guy that shows up at the door? No way. No way. Again, forget the Celtics, because I don't think Davis ultimately is going to end up here, because I don't think Ainge is going to give up Tatum. I think that's a lot of bullcrap.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know Dell Demps. This is just my opinion. But I think that sort of swayed him. The idea that, okay, we can get Tatum. And I'm telling you, he's going to show up in June, expect to get Tatum, and it's going to be, as you said, a bait and switch.
Zero in a second.
And they're going to be like, oh, we should have made this deal already.
Chris, your thoughts on last night?
You know, I don't think it's the end of the world, obviously, that they lost that game. But at the same time, you know, when I look at it, it just seems like they have a hard time sort of gaining full traction. They come in winning 10 of 11. The Lakers had been blown out in Indiana, lost by 42 points. The Celtics had every opportunity to put their foot on the Lakers' throat, and they didn't do it, and it came back to bite them in the end. And that's the thing that, to me, is a little dangerous about this Celtics team. I don't feel that they necessarily have the killer instinct. I think there are times that they coast because they're talented, and if you do that, it costs you games. And when it costs you games, that could cost you home court, potentially. That can cost you seeding. It could make your matchups harder, and ultimately could prevent them from getting to where they want to go.
Do you have any second guesses, specifically? Shot selection, did Kyrie shoot too soon? Did Stevens play Gordon Hayward too much?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think that's why they lost, though, you know, playing Hayward too much. The Hayward one that bothered me was the Warriors game, not this game. I didn't think it was as bad in this game, or at least had as much of an impact on the game. The Warriors game that they lost, I thought Jaylen Brown had it going, and he iced him by going back to Hayward and basically not playing Brown until the end of the third quarter. This game, I think there were just some funky bounces. I mean, LeBron was like basically lost the ball on his own, you know, threw it back in. They got a lucky bounce. LeBron gets it back in the corner for the three. Even the Rondo thing was a lucky bounce. Tatum could have grabbed it and he didn't. I know people want to say, you know, okay, Marcus Smart's not on the court, but You know, there were plays, again, to go back to the Warriors game, you know, there have been games this year where Marcus Smart was on the court and they didn't get the bounce they needed or they didn't get the loose ball that they needed to get. So I think that was just more bad bounces. And, you know, Brad's chalking that one up to the basketball gods. I will say this, though. They did get outplayed. They completely got outplayed. And again, that sort of goes to, I think, when things are good for them, they feel like, well, we have it all figured out. You know, this is solved. Let's just coast.
So what do you mean outplayed? You mean out hustled or out executed?
Both. Both. I mean, I thought the Lakers wanted the game more. I thought the game meant more to the Lakers than it meant to the Celtics.
Did the moves made by the Bucks, Raptors, and Sixers make it more difficult on the Celtics?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, I love, you know, Mirotić going to Milwaukee. I think that's a good move for them. It gives them something that they need, which is a little bit more shooting. I know that this year Brooke Lopez has, you know, turned himself into a three-point shooter, and they have Middleton as well. But to have another big that can step out and shoot, I think that makes them dangerous. You know, Tobias Harris is a good player. I think he'll help the Sixers. It'll be interesting to see how they put all those pieces together. Landry Shamet was a guy that was helping them from a shooting standpoint. He was a guy who was coming off their bench and knocking down shots. But Harris is a better player. And if Jimmy Butler can be a good teammate and a good citizen, which is never a guarantee, I think that they can put that together. And then Toronto, I like the Gasol move, but out of all the moves, I would say that's actually the one I feel like will have the least impact.
Because?
He's a good player. There's no question about it.
Age.
But age, he's sort of a more traditional big. He's an excellent passer. I just don't think it's like an amazing, fantastic upgrade over Valanciunas. And a lot of their more successful lineups have had Serge Ibaka in them. Are you going to go old school and have Ibaka and Gasol in the lineup at the same time? Is Ibaka going to have to come off the bench? I think there's a little figuring out to do. Let me put it like this. I would have been more excited about the Raptors if they had traded for the other Memphis Grizzlies mainstay.
Connelly?
Mike Conley, yeah. If it had been Conley, and that's not a reflection on Marc Gasol. I just think that when I look at that team and what they had in Valanciunas and how they've played, it's an upgrade, but I don't think it's like this amazing upgrade for the Raptors.
All right, to your phones on an Agenda-Free Friday with Gasper. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gordon Hayward inbound to Kyrie, straight away against Ingram. Tatum sets the screen. Kyrie, right-hand dribble, turns the corner on Kuzma, attacks the paint, floats it off the window and in. Celtics lead 11.5 to go, no timeouts. Rondo into Ingram. Ingram will walk it up into the front court, 8 seconds to go. Ingram to his right, behind the Chandler screen, starts his drive, past Horford, reverses it up. Blocked by Horford, loose ball, pinballed around. Rondo for the game, he got it! The ball bounces to Rajon Rondo, who hits from the left elbow, and the Los Angeles Lakers have scored a stunning buzzer-beating win in Boston.
Wow.
A buzzer beater like this, what's the message to the team after a close loss?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we deserve to win. So I think sometimes the basketball gods reward that. And so we need to guard better if we want to have a chance to win.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like last night. Good for Stevens for framing it like that. Gasper agrees. He's in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Brandon in Arlington on Brad Stevens. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, guys, so I wanted to make a comment about that last caller that said Brad Stevens is the most overrated coach in the NBA. I think he made a good point, but he didn't say it the right way. He's the most overvalued coach in the NBA because he's the best basketball coach, but he's not the best NBA coach. And, you know, that's why we did well last year in games without Kyrie when a bunch of role players are playing, because that's when coaching shines through. But we've seen that that can only get you so far in this league. To win championships in this league, you need superstars. When you have superstars, you need a coach that can manage egos, keep good chemistry, keep morale up. Good NBA coaches aren't good basketball coaches. They're good babysitters.
Hey, it's a nice point.
Absolutely it is.
As the talent has increased, the return has gotten worse.
Listen, and Chris, I mean, I'd be curious as to your thoughts on it too, but nobody questions Stevens' basketball acumen.
No.
It's off the charts. The question is whether or not he can manage personalities. That's the question. In that league, that's a huge one.
Absolutely. And that's what Phil Jackson was able to do it. Pat Riley could do it. Doc Rivers was able to do it. Greg Popovich can do it. Now, it's a little different with the Spurs because I think the tone was set by the veteran guys there, from David Robinson to, you know, Tim Duncan, Bruce Bowen, all those guys. It's a little bit like the Patriots. You sort of walk in there and you have to conform or you're on your way out. But I think that when you look at Brad, that's sort of the biggest challenge. And it's ironic that it was Rondo who hit that shot, because Rondo was sort of the first time he was really confronted with that. Remember the whole "it's my birthday and I'll fly if I want to" thing?
Yes, with Rondo? I do, yes.
In L.A. And so that was the first time he was really confronted with that. And then, you know, afterwards, it wasn't that bad. Now, IT, I thought, got to a point where he established himself in the league. And, you know, he certainly had some ego. And if you remember, again, the Phoenix game, remember, he basically blame Brad Stevens for a loss against the Clippers a couple of years ago. So that, you know, there were issues and there's been pushback before, but it's a whole nother level when it's a guy like Kyrie Irving that you're dealing with.
So look, for the first time, we can say they're less than the sum of their parts. Where every year before this, they've been greater than the sum of their parts. Yep. They're not doing that this
But they always had guys, even IT, like you had a superstar who was sort of an underdog and had something to prove. The whole team played hard automatically. They played with a chip on their shoulder because they had something to prove. This team is the opposite.
Right.
You have guys saying, you know, Jaylen Brown saying, we're going to win like 5 or 6 championships. You know, Kyrie Irving is an established NBA superstar. This is a team that needs to meld and be motivated. That's a little different for Brad.
Dan and Southie, what do you got, Danny?
Michael, Tony, it's all for you guys, you know, harassing the fans of greater Boston and New England. You know, you brought up the – I haven't heard the term the Dawn in 18 to 26, 30 months. New York Jets, 3 out of 5 beating your New England Patriots. I mean, let's – and, Tony, for you to sit there and let that man from Milwaukee dictate what the topic's going to be and harassing people.
Yeah,
it's
Tony.
It's ridiculous. They put all these arguments to rest. And as far as I'm concerned, they could have won 16. They were in the running to win 16 out of 18 Super Bowls. I'm just saying they had a chance to win.
No, yeah,
I'm
definitely.
Saying they were going to.
Definitely.
But
no,
when
no,
you
no.
guys
they
say,
got
like,
screwed.
Oh, they had no chance against the Dawn. When have you used that term, the Dawn?
It's been a while.
I haven't heard you use that in months.
It's been a while. Years.
It's falling apart.
But if you think we're done harassing you, we've just begun, Dan.
Well, listen, you know, I know this is what, you know, this is what sports radio was like in the 20s and 30s in New York, or the 60s in Boston when the Celtics won. Hey, this is excellence. But for Tony to sit there as a New England fan and let an out-of-towner run him off and have him say yes, it's disgrace.
Okay. What did sports radio sound like in the 20s there, Murray?
I don't know why all you are making so much of this George Herman Ruth. I'll tell you, he stinks, and he sucks, and he blows.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's...
Keep going, please. Come on, that's too easy.
I can't come up with anything else.
16 out of 18 Super Bowls.
How do you do blah?
Just get gyroscope in there.
So wait a minute. He said 16 out of 18 Super Bowls, right? So 08, Brady was hurt. That means one of the years that Brady was there, they weren't contenders.
This just in.
I'll take it.
A telegram has just arrived from a listener in Queens. It just reads... Blur, you couldn't be more wrong on your take on George Herman Ruth. Blur. Coming up after the break.
Oh, that's tremendous. That is good.
Oh, now it's my fault that I'm not protecting sacred ground of the Commonwealth. Yeah. That's, again, my job.
The Don really has botched that quarterback situation.
Oh,
with that
he
team,
killed
though.
Me. Yeah. He killed the Jets, killed me. The Don's killed
me.
Yeah,
you believed in two people you shouldn't have believed in. Mark Sanchez, John Elway.
I'm just hoping there's someone to give you some competition, but, you know, no one does. Here's Jim and Quincy. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello?
Hi, Jim. Yes, go, please.
Yeah, is Maz here?
He's here. Hold on. Maz!
Yeah, I'm here.
Anthony, you have the phone call. Anthony!
No, I've let down people from Massachusetts and the Italians today, so who else can I let down?
Hold on. Jim, hold on. I just... yes, Anthony's here. Anthony, go ahead.
Yeah. Go!
Maz.
Yes, Jim.
How do you rate Frank Robinson all time in baseball?
So, look, he's way up there. I said this to someone today. There are certain guys that, and I don't care what the numbers are or anything else. I didn't even know, apparently, Bill James tweeted something out about Frank Robinson should have been the MVP in 1966.
Should not have been?
Right, you a-hole. The guy just died. Can you let it go?
I can't stand people who say inappropriate things about people who've just passed. I would never do that.
So look, here's what I'll tell you about Frank Robinson. To me, he's one of the guys that, like, there was a... I said this to you the other day. There was a regal quality about him. When Frank Robinson walked in the room, you knew it. You knew it. And so, MVP in both leagues, first African-American manager, and then beyond that, he's one of the real sort of icons in the history of the game. The big loss for baseball. I'm a big Frank Robinson guy.
Okay. Was his 66 MVP overrated?
I mean, I don't know. I wasn't alive.
I mean, my God.
So, look, all I'll tell you is he was a great player. I told Beetle this story off the air, and I'm not going to tell it on the air because I know you hate story time. I'll save it
just
for the baseball
reporter. Just go.
Frank Robinson was the player manager of the Indians. He once demoted a guy to AAA named Wayne Garland, who was a right-handed pitcher. Back in those days, and the Red Sox used to do this, the major league team would play the AAA team during the season in an exhibition. So after Robinson demoted the guy to AAA, he ripped Frank Robinson. They went down and played the exhibition game, and Garland was pitching, and Frank Robinson got in the box, and he grounded out. And on the way back to the dugout, he crossed the pitcher mound and cold-cocked the guy right there. It was awesome. It's one of the great old-school baseball stories ever.
Here's the tweet that got deleted by that nerd pervert when he put it up last night. By the way, Baseball Reference War insists that the most valuable player in the American League in 1966 was not Frank Robinson, but Earl Wilson, a pitcher who was 18-12 with a 3.43 earned run average, 1 point better than the league earned run average of 3.44. Look it up. No, it's just thought I would mention it.
Wow.
That was quickly followed up by Dennis Eckersley, who just wrote, shut up.
Vincent in Connecticut, your thoughts for Chris Gasper.
Yeah, I'm a pediatrician of 45 years experience and had millions of 4- and 5-year-olds go through my office and had a few 4-year-olds of my own. I want to tell you that this Irving guy is a 4-year-old emotionally, and what he says today has no connection with tomorrow or the day after. I honestly think he's so attached to his dad, you know, that wonderful ad they did together, that if anything could come up in New York that would attract him down there even mildly from a basketball point of view, he'd run in a second.
Okay.
I don't know how many...
Well, hold on, just stop. You do agree with that, Gasper, that the lure of New York is...
Yeah, I mean, it's something he's talked about in the past, that, you know, being able to go home. I think the lure for New York, it's not just going home, it's you're the guy. You're the guy that turned around the New York Knicks. Like, I think that's a lure for a lot of guys. And I think Kyrie's one of those guys. I read something, you know, the other day about this, about Kyrie being the bad guy. I think Jay King had it in The Athletic. The idea that Kyrie is more like Kobe than he is like LeBron. You know, Kobe liked being the lightning rod, liked being the villain, liked being the bad guy, liked the attention, right? Whereas LeBron James and I think Kevin Durant, who just had another tiff with the media, they don't want that. It's sort of leave me alone, let me play basketball. I think Kyrie sort of feeds off the feeding frenzy a little bit. And, you know, where would that be greater and more intense than New York City?
All right, we continue with Gasper. It's the first we spoke to him since the Super Bowl, so we'll get his game thoughts right after Murray's update.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry, I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
5 seconds frozen on the clock. The Patriots with a 13-3 lead over the Rams. Tom Brady, about to be a 6-time champion, takes the snap, drops to the knee. And the Patriots have won their 6th Super Bowl title. In the early 2000s, they won 3 of 4. Now they have won 3 of the last 5. And yes, it's still a dynasty.
6-time world champion. And there ain't nothing you can do about it. And they're still here. And I don't think they're done.
All right, Gasper, Super Bowl game thoughts. We haven't talked to you about this yet. Go ahead.
Well, my overall takeaway is that you and I were sort of arguing back and forth throughout the playoffs about whether the Patriots were a run-to-pass team. That was their identity on offense. And I said that it was. You said, no way. I look at it, I don't see how you can watch that game, evaluate that game, and not think that was the case. I mean, they came out in 2 backs when they needed to score the touchdown in the fourth quarter. They were in 2 backs. The first play of that drive is a play-action pass to Gronkowski. They're in the 2-back set after that, and they use it to spread them out because they know that that's going to force the Rams to put their base defense on the field, which was not always a given in the past. You know, when teams did not respect in the past the Patriots' ability to hurt them with the running game, you would still get a nickel defense.
So apparently
they were
still a nickel.
The 2-back.
Bedard said they were still a nickel. I saw those linebackers trying to cover in the passing game, and I thought too that they subbed a defensive back for a linebacker. Bedard said no, they stayed in their nickel.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean it certainly looked like with the matchups that you got that they didn't have the answer there, and they were more concerned with what the personnel was to run the ball.
So you're
than to throw the ball, and when they needed to salt the game away, they did it with the running game.
No, but so when they scored, they threw.
Out of obvious running personnel.
No, I'm just, but when they scored their touchdown.
How was the only touchdown scored?
They threw the Chris.
What was the first play of the drive, Mike?
It was a little toss to Gronkowski over the top.
It was a play action pass. So what did they fake? Running the football.
So you're saying when they threw on that drive, they won?
I said that they're. What do you think run to pass means?
And they ran everything else.
If run to pass doesn't mean play action passing, then what does it mean,
Chris? I think without Tom Brady, the running game doesn't work like it works. It just doesn't. If they had Dak Prescott as quarterback, their offense would look like Dallas's, which is a college offense, which means it sucks. And oh, by the way, the Patriots offense on Super Bowl Sunday sucked. So neat, you ran the ball. You scored 13 points. I mean, and it wasn't that way all playoffs. You put points on the board all playoffs, but when Brady put up 350, they scored in the 30s.
When he put up two something,
he struggled.
I feel like you don't understand what I'm saying. This is not the running back argument. This is a different argument. I'm talking about the identity of the offense.
It was more balanced than it's ever been.
And the fact that they were using Devlin so much and that they were using what we would all agree was heavier personnel you would traditionally run out of. The fact that they made teams respect the run and that was setting up the pass. That's what run to pass is.
I understand.
And that's what I'm saying their identity was. This wasn't like no huddle, chuck it all over the field. And yeah, they were an empty on that drive, but they're an empty with two tight ends, a fullback, and a running back. And so that causes the Rams, whether it was base or whether it's, you know, I mean, frankly, nickel is the new base. Whatever it was not a personnel situation that was suited to defend empty. And why were they in it? They were in it because they had enough fear and respect for the Patriots running game that when they put that personnel on the field, they felt like they had to match it enough to be able to slow down the run. And to me, that was the identity of this offense. And it's weird because now you're putting me on the other side. Is I'm not disagreeing with you on Brady, but honestly, if you had told me the Patriots were going to win a Super Bowl in a postseason in which Tom Brady threw two touchdown passes and three picks, I would have said, no way. And that's exactly what they did. And I think it was because of the identity of the offense. Josh McDaniels talked about it while we were down there in terms of you have to find the best way to utilize the personnel that you have. And with what they didn't have in terms of wide receivers, what they did have was a very good offensive line, a very good fullback, and tight ends who could block. And they based the offense off of that, whether it was running the ball or creating enough concern about the run that it opened up the passing game. And ultimately, that's my message to you, is that they needed the run to open up their passing game. And that's what happened on that drive in the Super Bowl. So maybe, I'm right.
Maybe.
I'm right.
That's why their offense. Period. But that's what happens when you have a running offense. You don't score.
See, I think they won because of their defense. But anyway.
Call me crazy. It feels like they could have done anything on offense. They could have done whatever they wanted. Maybe they should have gone empty and chucked it around more because that running stuff sure didn't work. They were off the field consistently the entire night. They didn't score. So neat. They handed the ball off. They got big. They controlled some matchups. They didn't score. I'd rather spread.
Well, how did they win the other games? Again, I just mentioned it to you.
The running game was a part of it. But if they don't have Tom Brady back there and Gronkowski and Edelman and then that whole threat of the passing game,
yes,
it's not nearly as effective.
But the threat of the passing game wasn't as great this year. They increased the threat and enhanced the threat of the passing game by being more than respectable in the run. That's my whole point. I'm not saying that they don't pass the football. I'm not saying that they're out there running the wishbone offense. That's not my point. My point is that instead of being a team in the past that would just sort of run just to keep you honest, but you know, we know that what we're really going to do is we're going to pass it. We don't care how many DBs are on the field. We can execute. We can do it.
No, they were more balanced.
They were more balanced, and they needed that balance to be able to throw the football, because if it were just about chucking it all over the field, they didn't really have it this year.
I don't know about that. I mean, look, I'm not disagreeing that the running game was more important. Of course it was. If they just threw 60 times, I bet you they'd get to 13 too. I do. I bet you if they didn't use Devlin and didn't draft Michelle and just put Brady in the shotgun there and he threw it 60 times, they'd get to 13. Yeah, no, I do. And if that's what the formula is going forward, look out, man. What, you're counting on your defense to hold teams in single digits? No, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not going all the way around to that. They got 13 points. I mean, why anyone would talk about the offense, period, is beyond me. They scored 13 freaking points.
Well, because I'm just making a point that you were wrong and on something I've told you about,
so Chris,
basically all postseason.
What you're saying
that's why I'm bringing it up. I didn't say I mean, obviously, we all watched the game. We know the defense was the better unit. That's not my point. I'm just making the point that I was right.
So what you're saying is they don't really need Brady anymore.
No, I'm not saying they don't need Brady, and that's certainly not the point. See, now we're all on sort of opposite sides. Well, now you're telling me Brady can throw it 60 times at age 42.
I'm telling you
Captain Decline is telling me throw it 60 times. times at age 42. Whoa, that's the best
whoa,
way
whoa,
to
whoa,
win.
Whoa, I haven't said.
Yeah, right. So now I guess we're all in. It's opposite day, right?
I said decline 5 years ago. I haven't done that in a long time.
Actually, you said you've been saying decline since 2009,
Captain. I said it in 2009. I haven't done it since. I was wrong about that,
Captain.
Please,
decline.
On.
No, this
Captain
is great.
Decline since 2009.
The running game sets the tone
to 13 points. 13 points.
What did they score?
Points.
What did they score?
I like
the other
detective.
Games?
Yeah, when Brady threw 350, when he put it up for 350 yards against the Chargers and the Chiefs. Wow, they got in the 30s. Is that a coincidence,
Lieutenant?
And then he throws in the 200s or whatever it is in this game, and they're at 13. I mean, look, if you want to try and win that way, good luck.
Sergeant's already taken.
Good luck. Something tells me that I'm just telling you that if Brady had just thrown it 60 times and they had spread it out and done that thing and scrapped the running game, I bet you they would have gotten to 13.
Yeah, maybe they would have. I don't know. I don't think they. I mean, how many times did they throw to Chris Hogan? How many catches did he have?
Six,
how many
zero.
Catches did he have?
Oh, zero.
What did Philip Dorsett do?
Nothing.
Well, he didn't throw to him.
Okay. Now they had. They felt like they had to keep James White in on protection a lot of times, so he didn't really go out. So if he's throwing it 60 times, who's he? Is he throwing it to Edelman 30 times?
So you think if he threw it,
would Edelman survive that?
Well, no. Just let me ask you: if he threw it 60 times, do you think they'd get to 13 points?
With this team this year, no. I don't. No, I don't. I mean, their offensive line was one of their
points.
Was one of their better skill players. I mean, riding that offensive line, the protection was great, being able to run the ball. And that, here's another thing I was right about. I said all year, I said Gronkowski had one more big game left in him.
It's infectious.
He did,
this
right?
Bitchy.
It's not bitchy. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you what happened.
I'm right. I'm telling you. I'm right.
I'm correct.
Okay. About what again? Because I can't remember
exactly
what it is.
Because I said consistently on this show that I thought Gronkowski had one more big game left in him.
Oh, that's the other thing that you're right about.
Yeah.
Did people dispute that?
Does it matter? I mean,
were you wrong about anything?
Oh, yeah. I was wrong about tons of things this year.
Okay.
No question. Were you guys wrong about anything besides the entire season and the postseason?
Oh, no. I'm wrong most of the time.
And Sony Michel?
Yeah, most of the time.
Should we go down the list?
Sure. Keep going.
Okay. No. Yeah, this is
because this show's only 2-6, correct?
Yeah, no. Well, we can
you
come
guys
back
want
Monday.
To do a weekend show so we can review all the things we were wrong about?
How about
year?
Monday through Friday?
Okay. That sounds good.
What was the column? When did I read that they could get through the AFC but not win the Super Bowl? Was that you or was that someone else?
Yeah, I came on the show and I said that they could get to the Super Bowl, but winning it would be another matter, which is not the same as saying they can't win it. But fine, you want to call me on that? That's fine. And I said that on this show. And then Maz said to me, you think they can win in Kansas City? And I said, I think it's 50-50. And he said, you're out of your bleeping mind.
Okay.
Are you
I was
done?
Wrong. Are you done?
Yeah.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Okay. What else about the game do you want to talk about?
Long commercial-free segment
is
next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bored my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
There was one player in particular that there was a lot of discussion with, and he's well aware of it. And was honest with him on that and why we didn't do it and what he needs to focus on for his career and for us finishing this year strong.
Kyrie, are you happy to have the deadline to pass this group and be able to just focus on the next couple months here to get ready for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the deadline was a lot for a lot of other people, I'm assuming. So, you know, for us, we were pretty set. They made that very clear, our management. So, you know, I'm just happy that now we just have to focus on the rest of the season and, you know, have some fun doing so. You know, yeah, I'm just glad it's passed it.
So I had Jimmy put that together because I wanted Kyrie to be the guy that Danny Ainge is talking about. I'm sort of willing that to happen, but I admit it's probably not Kyrie.
Because when I saw Kyrie first, Jim. Why do I keep calling you Jim? Gasper. When I saw, it's the same time I've called you Jim in the last minute. I don't know why. Well, I saw Kyrie last night in the post game, and when he said that about, I'm just glad it's over, he almost like sighed a relief. Or, I don't know. I was reading into it, obviously. And then when Ainge said this morning on TNR that I had to talk to a player who was being named in rumors, I wanted to talk to him so he knew and da-da-da, I put those two things together. I said, oh, he's talking about Kyrie. That they heard those comments from Kyrie last week in New York, said, well, if he's got one foot out the door, then we got to look at, you know, our best interests, and maybe they were taking calls on Kyrie. But, again, the way he sort of phrased that second part of it, saying, you know, what's best for him in his career and he could finish the season strong. Felt like he's talking about a young player. So I don't know. Who do you think he was talking about?
I don't know. I mean, normally I side with Jimmy. You know, he said Marcus Morris. I think that's legitimate. Tatum would make a ton of sense because that would have been a name that at least would have come up in discussions, right? We know that. We know that Dell Demps would have asked about you know, Tatum, even though they can't make the move. But it's you don't want to have Tatum playing the rest of the season feeling like he's, you know, the equivalent of a lame duck coach, basically like, well, I'm just here the rest of the way until they can trade me in late June at the draft, you know, to get Anthony Davis. That deal becomes contingent at that point or whatever. So
Tatum does make sense if it's not this deadline. Like, I just assumed Danny was talking about someone who's being talked about being traded, you know, yesterday. Mm-hmm. But if he's talking about just the Anthony Davis trade rumors and Jason Tatum is the prime name there, that makes a lot of sense. And that's someone that they need down the stretch, and the way he phrased it about the rest of your career. So maybe it was Jason Tatum.
And you know what the good news is, and we didn't even touch on this yet? Tatum played his ass off last night. He was good.
He was really good.
I mean, he was good. And all the way around. I mean, you know, 10 rebounds, I think, and he's getting better at his rebounding. You can see that developing over the course of the year. Tatum's the guy they got to worry about, short-term and long, especially if Hayward ends up being what he is for the rest of the year. Like, they need another guy to play alongside Kyrie. Kyrie clearly has a good relationship with Tatum. He's the only other guy that can probably get his own shot consistently or close enough to consistently and score when Kyrie doesn't. Like, they need that. You know, Tatum, to me, be the leader in the clubhouse.
Okay, so
that's the guy he was talking about.
I'll throw Rozier in there, too, because, I mean, that would, you know, that would make some sense.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what others have immediately went to Rozier. That would make sense,
too. I mean, if you're going to make, like, a short-term sort of upgrade, you know, he would have been the easiest guy to move on
from. I'm just telling you, you know, Danny Ainge just drops that big hint. I'm just surprised the name hasn't come out, which leads me to believe it is Tatum, because that name's already come out. Like, there's been multiple reports that the Pelicans asked for Tatum or the Celtics, you know, hinted that Tatum was on the board.
His name was everywhere.
That name was there. And, you know, we haven't heard anything about it being Rozier or Marcus Morris or some other young player. So maybe it was just simple as that. You know, we need your best here for the rest of the year. But if it's Tatum, though, it's in my head a little bit. Like, I got to go to New Orleans now. You're sending me to the...
Yeah, but he's the same guy that said... He even said he'd trade himself for Anthony Davis.
Well, this is true. That's true.
I mean, he's, you know, he's a smart kid. He knows what's up. He knows it's a business. And he said, I trade myself for Anthony Davis.
So. Which ultimately, if it plays out that way, Danny Ainge will have traded Markelle Fultz for Anthony Davis.
Exactly. Unbelievable. Fultz. So, I mean, how come you're not taking more of a Fultz victory lap? Oh, how come you're not bringing up the Yale stuff?
Well, you didn't listen yesterday.
I was 240 yesterday, Chris.
Sorry.
I was all over it yesterday.
Or sorry.
All over it yesterday. Oh, my God. And it's not just that. I mean, I don't know Fultz. I just didn't like the fact he lost to Yale or he had a losing record as a starter his last year there in Washington,
yeah,
right?
He did.
So, but just the pantsing that Danny Ainge performed on, it wasn't Brand. Who was the GM at the time with Philly that made that? Or was it?
No. It was, what's his name? The family in Phoenix.
Colangelo. It wasn't Elton Brand. Oh, I wasn't sure where you're going, because I was going to say, like, it wasn't Sam Hinkie, because Sam Hinkie wouldn't have made, you know, Mr. Trust the Process, he wouldn't have made that deal. It was Brian Colangelo who fell
what
in love with.
What an absolute pantsing.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, it's like the Joe Barry Carroll deal all over again.
No, Joe Barry Carroll, I had to look it up. Joe Barry Carroll was an all-star.
That's true.
Fultz can't lift his hands over his shoulders. He's such a mental case, he can't shoot
but
basketball.
But Joe Barry Carroll did have the nickname, you know, Joe Barry Cares. Like,
no, but I understand, but I mean, at least he was an NBA player. I don't know if Fultz is an NBA player.
You know, you got Parrish, too, so it was a heist. This is another heist. Oh, my God. This is an Auerbachian heist.
I would challenge Markelle Fultz to a free throw shooting contest right now.
Seriously.
And I bet you I'd win.
And to this point, Chris, if I'm Philly, I just hold on to him and shove him on a shelf and just hope that there's whatever, a 1 in 100 chance that he figures it out and becomes a player and you save face somehow down the line. In the meantime, you say he's had some personal problems or emotional problems or some psychological problems or he has a bad shoulder or you make up some nonsense. And you say it's just all these chips have been stacked against him. We still believe in Markelle. And you put him on the shelf. If it takes 4 years, I don't care.
Yeah.
Instead of trading him for Simmons and a second.
I mean, Jonathan Simmons is a good bench player. Like, he'll help their bench depth, which, as I said, you guys got depleted a little bit when they made the Tobias Harris deal. So, you know, they did need that, but it just sort of tells you, like, they didn't even think Fultz could help him off the bench. Like, Shamet was already ahead of him, and they had to deal him. We've seen TJ McConnell. We've seen what he can do there. They're just like, this guy can't help us, period.
So here's my second take on that, is that it's not just Philly. Because it's not like they got a lot. Philly got a lot of brushback when they took him number one. Fultz was a consensus number one guy, and I'll throw LA onto that.
It wasn't consensus on this show, though. Not for me. Not for you.
No,
I
understand. I understand. But the basketball world. Yeah. It's not like the basketball world looked at Philly and went, "You idiots." And it's not like the basketball world looked at LA and said, "You idiots, you're taking Ball." Like, those were consensus 1-2 guys. Not 100%, but consensus.
Ball was a little more. I mean, you could have gone either way, but.
I don't know.
I mean, no one ripped him for it, but it was kind of like, okay, Ball, like, the Ball family wants to be in L.A. Magic sees a little bit of himself in this kid, like, you know.
I'm just saying, what kind of miss? Like, what with the scouting with those teams? Because I said this yesterday. I'm not basketball is my fourth sport. I'm not a basketball guy.
Yeah.
But even I know, like, this is not how you're supposed to shoot the basketball, right?
Well, he wasn't shooting that way at Washington.
No, I'm talking about Lonzo Ball.
Oh, Lonzo Ball. Yes. Okay, yeah.
I'm talking about that shot.
Yeah.
So to miss that badly on Fultz, and then to take a kid who does not have a normal shot over Tatum, who was polished, it's just the scouting on those teams. How do teams miss that badly?
I mean, it speaks. I mean, I think you have to give, Ainge and his staff, Mike Zarin and, Austin Ainge, all those guys, you have to give them credit. I mean, they knew who the player was amongst those guys, and they not only got their guy, they got additional assets there. They don't hit it right every time. There have been the Fab Mellos and J.R. Giddens that
they've
selected.
What's so funny? I'm laughing because not only did Ainge make the deal, but when he made it with Philly, he said, yeah, but, you really should give me something else. Okay, fine. We'll give you another first rounder.
Yeah, another first round pick.
Which could have been if it had been in the top five last year, as it could have very well have been, they might have gotten Luka Doncic on top of it.
Oh, that would have been amazing. Luka's so great.
Hey, yeah. He went third, right? Went third. Like, think of that. He could have had any one of those guys. The guy at Michigan State.
Jaren Jackson?
Yes.
Who's been really good for
Memphis. Could have had him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if it had just broken a little bit more in his direction, and I'm not... It would have been one of the. It already is one of the all-time great pantsings of all time. Like he came that close to getting Luka Doncic too.
Imagine if he had gotten Dario Saric out of it too.
All right, Chris. Anything
unreal.
Else? Anything else you
that
want?
I was on the table.
See, Jimmy.
Anything else?
Jimmy,
you want?
Jimmy's the best.
Anything else you want to say you were right about before you leave?
No, I'm fine. I'm good. You could, if you want to hear more things I was right about, you can listen to Gasper and Murray tomorrow.
Okay, maybe I will. What do we got? What time?
Yeah, 11 o'clock, just for 90 minutes, though, because the Bruins have the matinee game. So.
Only 90 minutes. Well, yeah. We're getting porked on that, but I'll be sure to listen into those 90 minutes tomorrow. Murray and Gasper, thanks for coming in, Chris.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks for rubbing my nose in it, Chris.
Hour to go, no commercials here, just an update. We're right back.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or Gambling Help LineMA.org.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.